We continue this morning on All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network, and we're pleased to be joined today by Colby Williamson. He's the military recruiting manager at Amazon and a former Marine, and we're going to talk about that. So, Colby, first of all, thanks for taking time out of your day and joining us here on All Marine Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, first of all, we got to find out something about you, and since this is All Marine Radio, where were you born and raised?
I grew up in a small town, College Station, Texas.
No way. So you're in the eye of the hurricane there at Texas A&M?
Yeah, I didn't end up at Texas A&M in the end, but it's a great town and one of those all-American type cities, so it was a good experience.
All right. How does the Marine Corps get on your radar?
I just always wanted to join the military and had a buddy come up to me and say, "Hey man, let's go check out some of the recruiting stations." So we went into each recruiting station. I was pretty interested actually in joining the Navy initially, and then I walked into the Marine Corps office and this staff sergeant, just kind of stops, looks me up and down and says, "You're too skinny, kid. Come back in a year." So I was convinced I wanted to be a Marine at that point.
That was it. That set the hook right there.
Yeah, I think I knew it was a calling at that point. That's where I belonged. So.
All right. So now, so you decided that that's what you're going to do. You're going to be a Marine.
Yeah, and I joined right after high school in August 2001. So 9/11 hit when I was at boot camp in MCRD.
Wow, you're the second person I've spoken to that's had that experience. Do you remember what it was like being in boot camp? And then I talked to one series officer, a buddy of mine named Kurt Knowles, and he said that we got them all the recruits together. And we told them, hey, look around. There's no planes flying, and that's because this happened, and we're going to war, and you're going to be part of it. So, what happened at MCRD? What was your experience?
Yeah, it was a lot like that, actually. Your first half of boot camp, you don't do anything but just run around in circles, and get thrashed. But we were out on the PT field, and every 2 minutes, a bird takes off from the San Diego airport. So that was the first thing I noticed. No planes were taken off, but of course you're just, running around, and just trying to survive. So, the next thing I see is a bunch of Marines rolling out concertina wire and setting up a post. So I got pretty pumped up because I'm like, hey, finally we're about to do some good training, I thought this was, just a part of the whole part of boot camp, but it turned out to be 9/11. So it wasn't until about 3 days later, they put us in an auditorium, and the CO gave us an address of what was going on, and saw President Bush, address the nation. And so it wasn't until then did we really understand what was going on. But yeah, exactly like the other Marine you mentioned, basically it was like you might be finishing boot camp early, and we're going to war. So. That's what we signed up for, and that's what Marines do, but definitely wasn't expecting for that to happen.
No, you're just going to come in, right? You're going to, be a Marine, see the world, live the adventure, get your GI Bill, right? Do all that, and not even had a boot camp, and already the plan is screwed up. Like, where is that?
Yeah.
Plus you're a Marine. Where's that Navy dude when I need him?
Yeah, right. I was like, did I really go into the right recruiting station at this point?
I think the answer to that was no.
All
right, so how do you talk to me about becoming a grunt? How does that happen? Were you open contract, or did you want to be a grunt? What was the deal on that?
Yeah, I went in a contract for first duty station to be assigned with security forces, which ended up being a really great thing because of all the great training that I received at Marine Corps Security Force Company, but after some time at First Fast Company and some time down in Kings Bay, Georgia, was sent back to the fleet, and went out to 1st Battalion, 3rd Marines in Hawaii, which again sounds like a good deal, but, spend most of our time on the 31st MEU.
Which is not a good deal when everybody else is going getting ready to go to war.
Right, right.
Okay,
yeah,
so.
Yeah, we were on ship in 31st MEU and did some gator squares, and before we knew it, we ended up off the coast of Kuwait. That's where we unloaded.
All right, so you unloaded in Kuwait, and then so you were, would you say you were at 1-3 at the time?
Yep, 1-3, mm-hmm.
All right, and so you unload in Kuwait, and so talk to us about what happens next.
Yeah, we spent a month in Kuwait, you know, and just kind of standing by for orders, and then so I was with Charlie Company, so we were a helo company. We pushed up into Iraq, and our first night in Iraq, we were at Camp Fallujah, and basically just staged there for a couple weeks. And then that's when we went into the second invasion of Fallujah, November 8th, 2004.
All right. And you guys obviously are a part of that. And what was your rank at the time? Were you a fire team leader, squad leader? What were you doing?
Yeah, I was a corporal fire team leader at the time. So, still pretty junior Marine and, you know, pretty young, but looking back and thinking about the responsibility that the Marine Corps you know, trust you with a fire team of four Marines in a situation like Fallujah, it gets big quick.
So talk to us. You guys come off the boat. You get to Camp Fallujah. You've obviously been following this fight. It's been in the news all the time. I mean, that's the one city in Iraq everybody knew was Fallujah, and you guys are following it. Now you're going to lead. What were your thoughts prior to going into the city and fighting?
Yeah, I think for a lot of us, we just went into it with the mentality of, you know, we're going to do what Marines do. We're going to get each other's backs, and we're going to give this thing 110%. But then, of course, as you internalize something like that and you get a moment to actually slow down and reflect on it, you realize you're pretty scared. I mean, this is the real deal, and there's a lot of uncontrollable variables in the situation like Fallujah or any combat situation. So, you know, you just kind of suck it up and do what Marines do, and you prepare, and, you know, you Marine Corps gives us a lot of great training, and, you know, pin your ears back, and, you know, you go in and do what you're built to do. So, but, yeah, I mean, I was pretty nervous, I'd say, going into it, but then as soon as we started getting into the city and doing what, you know, Marines do, it just kind of a lot like a radio switch. You just turn it off. And you just focus on your mission and, you know, come out of there as winners and very successful in what we did. So, you know, very proud to have had that opportunity to serve in a situation like that.
So, and what part of the city did you guys go through?
We were, I don't remember what section we were in, but we were between 3-1. And I want to say maybe 5th Marines. I wasn't sure who was on our left and our right.
3-1. 3-1 on your right.
Yeah, I think 3-1 was on our left, and then someone else was on our right. I've got a map. You know, I could get back to you on that.
Okay.
But,
no, I just wondered if you remembered off the top of the head. So, any your most vivid memories of that fight? Obviously, the first time you fight, you talk about going in but as a fire team leader, man, that's where the rubber meets the road. You know, those are the guys who, you know, who are yoking people up and they're doing it. So what are your greatest memories of that fight?
Well, as we staged outside the city, we just got a great opportunity to see what the U.S. military has in its arsenal. So, pretty much everything that, the Marine Corps and the Navy had to offer, you know, we started throwing at the city, tanks and, airstrikes and whatnot, sort of softening that initial target. And we waited for nightfall to go in, and we were only 20, 30 feet, into the city when we made our first contact. And probably the most memorable piece for me was switching over to NVGs and having to make that adjustment in a situation where you're making contact. All that training kicks into place very quickly. And, you know, hey, it's go time. So you make a lot of adjustments on the fly, but it's very, very real at that point. So that's probably my most memorable piece in terms of the initial push.
Our guest as we continue here on All Marine Radio is Colby Williamson. And we're talking about his time as a fire team leader in the Battle of Fallujah in November of 2004, one of the high points of the war in Iraq. And he privileged enough to be a fire team leader during that fight. I always ask Marines that come on, any way that you could put into words the courage and selflessness that you saw every day during that fight, from your Marines and the Marines around you, the corpsmen and the guys you fought with?
You know, there's been a lot of people out there that are a lot smarter than me that sum it up a lot better than I probably can. It's, I think, really hard to describe in words. But what I'll tell you, what is just so special about this country and about our military and the Marine Corps in particular, is watching a 19-year-old Marine not even hesitate to take action in a place like Fallujah, because what I do remember very vividly is the Iraqi forces that we had with us. You know, this is their country. These are their people. And, you know, I saw those guys hesitate, and a lot of those guys, you know, had more time and more experience than we did, but they hesitated. And, you know, you see a 19-year-old, you know, young Lance Corporal from, you know, Arkansas or a place like Texas or whatnot, not even hesitate to lead the way, to me is just absolutely remarkable. It's beyond what I would describe as bravery. Maybe it's almost, maybe it's a lack of intelligence. You know, you can make fun of us for being jarheads or whatever you want to, you know, call it. But at the end of the day, I think it's really hard to describe that in words.
The, you know, and the other thing that always has blown me away is, and they just do it, they don't do it once a week. Anytime you call their number, you know, they ball, they put it up. And, you know, I mean, if people could see it, it would make them cry. If you could see the shit that's going on all over the place, and, you know, and running out of a building down a street, you know, or down an alley, I mean, you roll the dice every time you do that. And they do it day in and day out. And they're absolutely incredible. Talk about, so the fight ends, and then, 1-3, how long do you guys stay in Fallujah?
Well, you know, there was the initial push, and we stuck around for about three and a half months. Things obviously, calmed down a lot more there towards the end of that. And then, we headed up to the, Syrian border, to help with, some small villages outside of the Korean village for their first opportunity for those citizens to vote. So that was a historical moment for us also to be able to participate in. Unfortunately, we lost a helo on the way up there, so we lost 31 Marines on that day, in addition to the casualties of a place like Fallujah. So pretty intense, you know, deployment.
You know what? There's so much stuff that happened during these deployments. You know, until you mentioned that, you know, I hadn't thought about that in a long time. And those things, man, that stuff hits you like, I don't know, like a baseball bat to the head when, you know, first of all, when it happens, and then even now, this many years later, when you all of a sudden mention it, you just remember like 31 guys gone. You know, boom, and you know, there's no discussion. End. It's just, it's...
The part about it that gets me is, you know, it doesn't matter how brave or how well-trained a Marine is or any service member, there's things like that that just happen that are uncontrollable, you know, just really, you know, unfortunate situations. And, you know, obviously a lot of us reflect on those guys and, you know, they'll always be in our minds and our hearts, but for the vast majority of folks back home, they don't even know that story. You know, it just becomes another, you know, just another statistic. But for me, something that always stuck with me, and it reminds me of how old I'm getting now, but, four of those, Marines on that helicopter, their wives were pregnant. And so those unborn children never have the opportunity to meet their father. And then now, you know, those kids are, see, that was January 2005. So, you know, they're over 10 years old already. And it's just, one of those things where all those guys are heroes, but it's not, there's not a movie about it. There's not, you know, a famous book or article where people are constantly thinking and remembering that sacrifice. It's just kind of like another day, of what our service members are, you know, doing and continuing to do for this country. So, it's just, you know, hard to describe in words. The dedication and loyalty and how much they sacrifice and how much their families have sacrificed.
You know, and when you talk about that, I've had guys on this program and guys have talked about struggling when they see, you know, Fallujah in the hands of ISIS. And,
right.
You know, Marines don't talk in, you know, in big glowing American flag terms. What they say is, hey, I had friends that didn't come home, you know? I mean, the same thing you said. I had friends that paid for that. You know, we paid for it. And now, what did we pay for? Why did those guys who you know, and those kids never had families, but those guys never got to hold their kids. You know, and you know,
right.
as a dad, I mean, what better feeling in the world is there to have your kid in your arms and look down and say, hey, this little guy, he's half me, for God's sakes. You know, I have a hand in this, and I've always dreamed of what it would be like to have a kid, and, yo, he's here. I mean, never to have that. And so, you know, that's to me why when we look around and, you know, looking at some of these places where we fought, and then all of a sudden, you know, we're not there anymore, and then whether it be the Taliban or ISIS or Al-Qaeda is back there, it's like, are you kidding me? You know, and it makes me think of Vietnam guys. Like, you know, we've lost 7,000. They lost 58,000. Like, really? Like, and we just, now we're just, it's over. We're done. We're out. I guess it is, but that's not our job. So anyway, but I think you very articulately, Colby, you know, capture, you know, the feeling of, you know, the random stuff that happens in combat that nobody can prevent. And I think, you sit around and you think, you know what? That could have been me, you know? Could have been very easily could have been me, and but you know, thank God it's not. Now you guys go home from that deployment, and do you make another combat deployment?
No, at that point, I think most of us decided to move on and, you know, transition out and sort of start a new chapter in our lives.
All right, so you get out, and did you go back to College Station? What do you do?
Yeah, no, I just, was like, you know, I don't know about going back to College Station, Texas. It's a great place, but it's, you know, a small town, and I think I wanted something a little bit different. So I decided to move to Florida. I decided to pursue a degree out at, Florida State University, which was also a great experience. Those guys have got a great, student veteran program out there.
Yeah, I've heard.
But, yeah, I just kind of went out there on my own and just started kind of building a new life for myself.
That's awesome. And you got out of the Marine Corps as a sergeant, as a corporal? What?
Yeah, I got out as a sergeant, you know, after that deployment. You know, a lot of the guys that were a little bit more senior than me, you know, EAS and got out of the Marine Corps. So, you know, went from being a fire team leader to one of the most senior guys on the enlisted side coming back from that deployment. So it's just fascinating how quickly those things can change and the responsibility that you pick up very quickly. And I think as veterans, when we get the opportunity to interview with companies, you know, we cut ourselves short and don't take the time to articulate that level of responsibility and how fast we grow as leaders in the military. So, you know, it took me years to figure that out and to be able to articulate that in a situation like an interview. But, yeah, I was fortunate to pick up sergeant, you know, around the 3-year mark and then, you know, decided to make that transition out.
Wow. Colby Williamson, Sergeant Type, Marine Corps, from 1st Battalion, 3rd Marines, a veteran of the Fallujah campaign. He's the military recruiting manager at Amazon and joins us this morning, and we're going to talk about that. So so you go there, what year did you go to Florida State?
Yep, I started out at the community college and then, like a lot of veterans, and then transferred over to Florida State and knocked out my degree and so I finished in 2008.
All right, so you go from like 2005 to 2008, something like that, right?
Right.
Wow. So you got done in 4 years. That's always good. And then, so then you look around. You have any idea what you wanted to do?
You know, I did, but you don't know what you don't know. I thought about things like, joining the federal government. I thought about being a police officer. I thought about going back into the Marine Corps as an officer. Really struggled with figuring out exactly what it is that I want to do and what's the reality and where can I really get my foot in the door. So I got a great opportunity to join a company called Aramark, sort of just to cut my teeth and get my foot into the door and learn about the business side of operations, and then really just started kind of building my career from there.
And how do you get, how did the door to human relations, is that what you're working in now? Is recruiting different from HR? Explain that to us. And how do you migrate in that direction?
Yeah, if you told me when I was a fire team leader in Fallujah that you're going to be a recruiter someday, I would have laughed at you, you know? I thought, yeah, right, that's not me at all. But what happened was during my transition, I watched my peers, I watched my Marine buddies struggle with the transition just like I was.
Right.
I was very determined, very enthusiastic, very, motivated and willing to do anything to build my career. But it was hard, and especially in a place like Florida in 2008, we had the recession. So I faced a lot of barriers to just, sort of get my foot in the door to a place like Aramark. And so once I got in there and started learning what it was like to be a leader in the civilian business side of the world, I was like, this is really not that hard. Why was it so hard to get this job? And so I just kind of started figuring that out and watching my buddies struggle to get really, good jobs and to figure out what it is that they wanted to do. And there just at that time in 2008, while there was a lot of support out there, there was nothing like there is today for veterans. And I didn't know how to write a resume. I didn't know how to interview. But I finally just decided, I want to be a part of the solution. And I sort of had a chip on my shoulder, but in a positive way. I sort of found my next battle to fight. I wanted to be a part of the veteran transition, and I didn't want the younger veterans coming into the civilian world behind me to go through those same sort of things. And so I decided to pursue a degree, a master's degree in human resources. And not really the human resource generalist type of guy, but really found a passion to get into recruiting. So eventually I got that opportunity and has since had the opportunity to really just dedicate my career towards helping veterans with their transition.
All right. Let me ask you, guys that are listening will certainly ask this. So you'd used your GI Bill going through Florida State. How did you pay for your, did you pay for the master's degree out of pocket? How'd you do that?
Well, I did like a lot of veterans, even though we have the GI Bill and now the 9/11 bill, I still worked full time while in school.
Okay.
So I was able to save some money, and then my company paid for a portion of it, and then I had a little bit of money left with the new 9/11 bill, transition. There's an extension for the 9/11 bill. So I took advantage of that, took advantage of the Yellow Ribbon scholarship, and then obviously I had my, company to help me out with some of that as well.
Okay, so Marines that are smart, that go through and work while they're going through college, save some money, you tell them that, hey, look, if you think a master's degree is going to help you, there's certainly ways to solve that financially and open that door and make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had a good mentor in my father who taught me the value of education. And, for me, I was never a good student in high school. I didn't make good grades. I had to work really hard to get good grades. But after those experiences from the Marine Corps, I realized that if you just dedicate yourself and put your mind to it, you may surprise yourself with how intelligent you are and how much, potential and capabilities you have. So once I started figuring that out and really bettering myself through education, more doors started to open up. But that was still just really scratching the surface. That's just only a fraction of what it takes to be successful in the transition. So, but that is definitely a big step, I would give to all veterans go out there and better yourself, get yourself a good education, and build yourself a new skill set and layer that on top of your military leadership experience.
All right, and then so while you're doing that, are you working for Aramark still? Have you moved from there? At the time you got your master's.
Yeah, so I had a great boss who was very supportive for me to go to class on nights and weekends, and stuck around Aramark for about 3.5 years, and then every job that I've ever had, I've been able to get through. Networking through LinkedIn, and almost every single time there was a veteran on the other side that went the extra mile to help me out. So my next step, I joined Target, which is a great retailer. Retail wasn't necessarily where I really wanted to be, but I, you know, Target had a great reputation for building leaders and for, you know, really giving you great opportunities to grow. And so joined Target, spent a couple of years there, and that opened up more doors for me. That helped me brand my portfolio or my resume, so to speak. I was really proving myself in the civilian business world, and I was getting better each step of the way. And then eventually got a tremendous opportunity to join Amazon. And, you know, my wife had a good job. We had a house, you know, friends and family, but I didn't even hesitate, packed everything up, and relocated from West Palm Beach to Seattle about 2.5 years ago.
Wow. Now people are gonna be interested because Amazon is such a huge name in the business world now. Was that via LinkedIn? Was that through a connection? Was that simply that the resume that you had put together with your, you know, time in the Marine Corps, your degree at Florida State, your master's degree, and then your jobs at Aramark and Target? You just steadily built that thing. And you just interviewed. How did you get to Amazon?
Well, you know, I would tell you that it was a combination of everything, and it took me really about 8 or 9 years after the Marine Corps to where I finally just exhaled and said, you know, my transition is complete. You know, I'm finally where I want to be. Which, you know, I was only in the Marine Corps for 4 years, so to think that it may take somebody, you know, 8 years to transition to get where you really want to be. You know, took a lot of determination, you know, but through that crucible-like experience, I became an expert in the transition space, but none of it came easy. I never got lucky. It was never, you know, anything like that. Actually, the first time that I interviewed with Amazon, I got turned down. I really wasn't the right fit for the right position, but through that experience and through those leaders who I met, I became even more excited and just knew that Amazon was really the place where I wanted to be, kind of like when I decided to join the Marine Corps.
Right.
There was just something special about Amazon. So I stayed in contact with my recruiter, who was also a Marine. She was a Marine officer and was one of the original military recruiters at Amazon. Stayed in contact with her via LinkedIn. And about a year later, she reached back out to me and gave me this opportunity to join Amazon. And moral to the story is anyone out there who's ever been rejected by, you know, an employer or, you know, who's ever been turned down, that should just only, inspire you to try harder, shouldn't deter you or slow you down from what your major goal is.
All right, Colby, we got to take about a 3-minute break, and you'll hold with us, and then we'll come back and want to talk to you about the program now that you help run for Amazon, and what it means to veterans, advice you'd give to them as they transition, and we'll continue with all that as we continue here on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. This hour of All Marine Radio brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, and you ought to own a battle mug. It's an awesome gift and suited for any commemorative event, farewells, promotion, mess nights, retirements, and then other special occasions like birthdays and Valentine's Day would fit in there as well. Christmas, certainly, but don't wait till Christmas. Let me tell you what they start with. 10 pounds, about, I think it's 10 and a half pounds of T6 aluminum. They mill it, machine it, anodize it, and they throw Picatinny rails on it, right? Those are the rails on your M4, your M16, or other rifle.
Okay.
But those are our service rifles. So you, so that's what you got. And then on those things, when you're going to the field, you throw it, you slap the top on it so you don't dump your coffee in your lap. You throw a scope on it. You throw a laser on it. You can throw anything that you throw on a rifle, you throw on your mug. Yeah. It's a command scepter. It's a command device, okay? It's simply not a mug. The handle is the carrying handle of the M16, right? Although we don't carry the weapon like that, that's what it is. So it's a very cool piece of equipment. You can have it laser engraved to personalize it on the base. Mine is, relative to my time to the Blue Diamond, the 1st Marine Division. So very cool. And then when you're in the office, you can, there's decals. Mine has a Marine Corps emblem on it, American flag, and other cool things that you can put on it. So it's a gift for anybody that served. Battlemug.com is where you find it, and they have a whole series of products that are very cool, very unique, and something that, you won't get anywhere. Use the promo code Marine, get 15% off. Battlemug is a veteran-owned company. It's a Marine-owned company, and the product is made entirely here in the United States of America. So they're a sponsor of this hour of All Marine Radio. We're talking transitions, and we'll continue with our guest, Colby Williamson, here on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. We continue here on All Marine Radio. Colby Williamson from Amazon. He's a military recruiting manager, and I'm not going to ask you if you know who's playing the saxophone on that, Colby, because I know you don't know, but you have to admit it's good saxophone, yeah?
Hey, it's better than what I could ever do.
All right. We've been talking about Colby's career as a Marine and his transition. And interestingly enough, you know, before the break, Colby, you talked about it taking you 8 years to really make a transition. And in those 8 years, you know, 4 years getting a degree, and then a couple years at two different companies, and then at night, you know, getting a master's degree, all that setting you up for where you ultimately, you know, if you will, your dream job at Amazon. So. Coming out of the Marine Corps, did you look at it like that in terms of it's going to take me that long, or how did you look at it?
I had no idea. You know, the way I looked at it was, I'm a Marine. I'm going to go get my degree. So Marine plus degree equals great job. You know, you're going to go land a great job and go pursue the American dream and live happy ever after. And that's not the reality. Doesn't matter if you get out as a non-degreed E4 or if you get out as a academy grad full bird colonel. I see every single one of us face those transition challenges. So I was naive to think that way, but that enthusiasm sort of carried me through it.
All right, when I want to talk transition a little bit, and then I want to talk about your programs at Amazon in terms of looking for veterans, hiring veterans, and what veterans need to do, and how they get hooked in with you, and all of that. But what advice do you have for guys that are getting ready to transition to make a good one?
How long is the show? I could
go ahead.
I could do one all day about
4 hours
transition. Yeah, I could talk about it all day long about the things that you need to do and the common mistakes that I see veterans make. Where should I start? I guess number one is just don't assume anything. You don't know what the economy is going to be like tomorrow. You don't know what the job market's going to be like. You don't know how competitive you're going to be. So I think number one, Marines need to make sure that they're not making any assumptions. And something that I learned was the value of networking. I mean, I had several good jobs, but I got those jobs through networking on LinkedIn's platform, but I still spent countless of hours just applying to jobs on company websites and then never hear anything back. So for me, I would say to not assume anything and to really learn the power of networking, being a good listener, and getting yourself out there and educating yourself in every way possible, because the transition is not easy for anyone.
Were you pretty tight with your money? Did you have enough flexibility as you got out of the Marine Corps to weather any kind of financial storms? And because it does make a difference. I mean, if you have a wife and two kids when you get out of the Marine Corps, you don't nearly have, you know, the leash that that single guys who have money saved have, in terms of I can take my time, I can kind of measure myself into this. I don't have the logistics tail. Were you married when you got out of the Marine Corps, or how did you work the money piece?
No, I mean, I was single and I was still, you know, really young, so I think that gave me a lot of flexibility. I worked full time and went to school full time, and that's a good point. That's just, you know, going to layer on to the challenges of the transition. So, you know, I think it's important to be smart. I see a lot of veterans who, you know, and I completely understand why. You spend 4 years or 20 plus years in the Marine Corps, you don't really want anyone to tell you where to live anymore. But unfortunately, sometimes you've got to make, you know, a couple more sacrifices when you transition out and have a little bit of a vision for yourself, not just, hey, this is the short term, I just need a job to keep, you know, food on the table. You've got to have a plan to be able to sort of see around corners and have a vision for yourself. And so what happens a lot of times, veterans like myself want to go move to sunny, beautiful South Florida or, you know, some, you know, popular destination, but maybe that's not where the opportunities are. And so that's also something else that, you know, veterans really need to take into consideration. You know, go to an area where there's a lot of job opportunities and you can open doors up for yourself, and don't limit yourself to one geographical area. Think bigger than that. Think about the long-term opportunities.
If you, in retrospect, if you would have looked at your transition as maybe as an 8-year process, would it have been easier for you to say, okay, look, I don't really want to live in Denver, you know, but I'm going to go there for 2 years and I'm going to go to Targets in Minneapolis. I'm going to go to Minneapolis and live there for 2 years. And ultimately, and hopefully after those 4 years, and I'll have a master's by that time, I'll then be able to say, look at jobs, I'll be more competitive, and that's when would it have helped you to kind of say, look, I've got to do some probationary stuff because where I go is not going to be where I end, but I've got to get myself in a position to be competitive for the good jobs in those places. But I don't think we tend to think like that in terms of, you know, I'm going to do this first and get myself ready, and then by the time I'm 30, I'm going to be where I want to be, you know, in a job that I want to be at. Would it have helped you to look for a job, you know, at your transition like that, or not?
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. You know, one of the big reasons why I wanted to go to a place like Amazon was because of the growth. And had I had that sort of mentoring when I transitioned out, and maybe someone had just worded it differently, you know, hey, Williamson, think of it as one last duty station. Move to Minneapolis. Move to Seattle. Move to Denver, move to some of these big, you know, cities that have a lot of jobs and where these cities are growing at a fast pace, where there's more demand and there's more opportunities for growth. You're not getting shot at. You're not on deployment. You get to sleep in your house and you get to see your wife and your kids every night. So maybe it's not the exact geographical, you know, destination that you want to be in. Think of it as in long-term, you know, short-term sacrifice for a long-term gain. And I definitely would have been able to cut that transition time probably in half if I had that sort of advice.
Really? You think you'd be able to cut it in half? Wow.
Yeah, because, you know, I moved to a place like Florida, and it's a beautiful, great place, and I absolutely love Florida, but there's not a lot of jobs there. Right. You know, it's more of a retirement type state. Whereas in a place like Seattle, the second fastest growing city in America behind Austin. And so going to places like that, there would have been more of an opportunity. And when you're more junior or more early in your transition, and especially before my education and my experience at places like Target, I wasn't as competitive of a candidate. Right. So if I was in Florida, but I applied for a job in Chicago, it's very unlikely that I'm going to get a phone call over a more competitive candidate that's already located in a place like Chicago. So you've really got to have more of a vision for yourself and not just about what is it that I want to do right now. I just want to get out of the Marine Corps and I want to go home to my family.
And make
you
got money.
To think about the next 5-10 years down the road and have a plan to get yourself there.
Interesting. My guest this morning is a former Sergeant of Marines, an infantry guy. He is Colby Williamson, currently working for Amazon. He's the military recruiting manager, and we're talking about transitions and his experience, as well as because he does this now for a living, his advice to the rest of us we all transition at some point. Let's talk about what you do for Amazon. So tell us about what you know, what is your job as a military recruiting manager?
You know, when I came to Amazon, I came in as an entry-level recruiter and just sort of kept raising my hand in the air and saying, hey, I want to get involved with this military recruiting stuff. And I've been really fortunate to have these opportunities to grow at a place like Amazon. And I was just talking to a buddy today, and, you know, he was saying to me, I got to pinch myself sometimes. I can't believe we've got these great jobs at a place like Amazon where we get to do military recruiting for a living. And not a lot of companies have programs that are quite as robust as ours. So we're really fortunate to be in this situation. But what we do, and with a lot of passion and a lot of drive, is we spend our time looking for the most talented military leaders who are looking for opportunities at a place like Amazon, more specifically leadership roles within operations. And we match those talented individuals up with our interviewing hiring process. So in terms of scale and volume, last year at Amazon, we hired over 4,000 veterans across many different career paths.
Wow.
But the positions that I'm most proud of were over 500 veterans into very competitive salary exempt level management type positions. Those are the wins that I get really excited about, opening up those doors for, guys like myself or my buddies that, I know have a lot to offer.
All right. Talk to now Marines transitioning. What do they need to do to get ready? And what do they need to do to become competitive? You and I were talking before, you know, other companies have similar programs, be they Microsoft or other companies, and that like veterans. And you know, when you're transitioning, I don't know that very many of us talk to those people, and then you know we hear about them later, and we're like, what? Man, I should have found out about that and talked to them. So,
right.
What do you guys need to do to prepare? How do they find you? And what advice do you have for them?
Yeah, absolutely. There are some really great military career fairs out there. I would do research on that. I think it's important that you get out from behind that computer and go shake hands with guys like myself and other military recruiters or any recruiting professional that spends the time and money to show up to these career fairs because they want to meet veterans. Go build those personal relationships with those people that are on the other side. And when you do that, you also will learn a lot through that experience and what you need to do to make yourself better. A couple of pitfalls or barriers that I see veterans fall into is, again, getting stuck on a specific location. Or here's another one for you. So we all spend a lot of time on our resumes. Every time I go to a career panel or a workshop, the most common question I get is questions about how they can improve their resume. Because veterans think that they did something on their resume, and that's why they're not getting a phone call from an employer.
Right.
And there may be a lot of different reasons as to why they're not getting a phone call. But when they do get that phone call, where I think we as veterans need to get a lot better is being able to interview better. So over the last, you know, 5-10 years, there's a lot of great organizations out there like Hiring Our Heroes or Hire Heroes USA,
right,
that will help you with your resume. But once you get that interview with an employer, I see veterans really struggle with the interview process.
Why? I mean, most well, you know, is it just the nervousness of I'm out of my comfort zone. If this was a first sergeant, I would know how to talk to him. Hell, I'd even know how to talk to my company commander. I'd be more comfortable. But you know, this is a civilian thing. I haven't been part of that culture,
right,
for a while. Can you put your finger on why a guys who, as a group, talk a lot of shit? Are right? I mean, they're comfortable, you know,
yep,
using words.
Oh, yeah.
But then they get into a situation like this, and they tend to freeze up. You would think a lot of guys would be pretty comfortable with the spoken word and the verbal side of and really selling themselves.
Yeah. So we don't like to talk about ourselves. You know, it's especially Marines. You know, it's not about being an individual. I mean, that's beat into us. It's about a team. You know, individuals get your buddies killed. But in the civilian world, you are now an individual. And the interviewing process and the job searching process is extremely isolated. And so what we do is we put a lot of work into these resumes, and we get phone calls and we do interviews. And maybe we do okay on the phone interview, but when we get in person, we tend to get nervous. And I see a lot of really battle-tested Marines that are very intelligent and hardworking. It's okay to get nervous in the interview, but I see them cut themselves short because we're not used to talking about ourselves. We're too direct. We're too short. And in the civilian world, you really got to be able to get really comfortable with articulating what it is that you've done in the past so that that hiring manager can understand what you can do for them in the future. So something that every Marine should look into is an acronym. We love acronyms, right?
Right.
Is the STAR method, and that stands for situation, task, action, and result. And so when someone asks you one of these behavioral style questions, for example, tell me about a time you had to make a difficult decision, don't just, you know, say, hey, we were taking contact and I had to make a decision to maneuver my Marine. You've got to articulate a lot more than that. You've got to be able to slow down, explain that situation, articulate what it was that you did. We tend to always use the word we. And interviewers at many companies are trained to pick up on that word we and want to probe further to understand what is it exactly that you did. And so we're not comfortable breaking down those barriers and saying, this is the decision I made or this is the action that I took. And then that last bucket, in terms of results, somehow quantify what your results were. I mean, you don't have to always use metrics and data, but really articulate and explain to them what result you achieved from your actions. And again, we don't like to talk about ourselves. It's as if we're writing up a promotion document for ourselves. That's not what you're wanting to do in a military combat type situation, but in the civilian world, you've got to wave your own flag, and that's where we really struggle. So there's programs out there. We are big partners with Hiring Your Heroes USA, Hiring Your Heroes through the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and they've got a great fellowship program. And programs like that, I see veterans get the opportunity to go join companies like Amazon or Microsoft or Starbucks or whatnot and go work sort of like in an internship-type role and really prove themselves because they get the opportunity to roll up their sleeves and actually do the job.
Right.
And so another piece of advice I'd say is, you know, you may have already served in the Marine Corps, but if there's an opportunity to get into a fellowship program or even an internship, go out there and get that exposure and go show them what you've got to offer.
And those things are legendary for absorbing many of the people that get in those programs. And as you said,
absolutely,
Colby, if you can somehow or other sell your way into those programs, then, you know, most Marines would rather work than talk about, as you said, than talk about themselves. You get to go show them what you're made of, and usually that's not an issue for too many guys who've been in the Marine Corps in terms of being hard workers.
Yeah, you know, and if I had an interview for a job right now, even with all my experience and even interviewing people all the time, I would still get nervous. And I think we just need to say to ourselves that it's okay. It's okay to be nervous, you know, in the Marine Corps. We may see something like that as a weakness or whatnot, but in the civilian world, that's okay. And the way I sort of overcame that was every time I got an opportunity to interview for a job, I didn't care where it was located. I didn't care how much it paid. I didn't care if I was even interested in working for that company. I took every interview that I could possibly get for two reasons. One, it gave me an opportunity to get better at interviewing. I learned something about myself each time I went through those experiences. But I also built relationships with those hiring managers and those recruiters. Sometimes those recruiters move on to other companies or whatever it may be. I built a network for myself, and I self-taught myself how to be better at interviewing, being more comfortable talking about myself. Still don't like it, but I'm better at it now. And I've built a strong network of people versus spending countless and countless of hours just blindly applying to jobs on career pages and then never hearing anything back.
My guest this morning is Kobe Williamson, former sergeant, Marine Corps, infantry guy, fought in Fallujah in November of 2004. A member of 1st Battalion, 3rd Marines, and currently he's the military recruiting manager at Amazon. We're talking about what he does, his observations, getting hired. Talk to us about careers at Amazon. We know Amazon as a giant, everything. Amazon, I mean, does everything. I know they have operations. I know they have retail. They certainly have management. When guys are looking at a career at a company like Amazon, first of all, can you talk to us about the culture of Amazon and what you like about it, and also the different opportunities that exist there in terms of professional growth and different things you can do there?
Of course. You know, so the culture is a perfect fit for me and for a lot of Marines. We've got 14 leadership principles at Amazon, and you know, you can do a quick Google search on those. And if you read those principles and you read the definitions to them, you'll sit there and smile and say, this is a lot, what it looks like to be a leader of Marines. So for me, culturally and from a leadership standpoint, it's just been a great fit. There's a lot of ambiguity at a place like Amazon because the company is only 21 years old and, you know, we're huge and we continue to grow at a very fast pace. And so in an environment like that, we look for leaders who can blaze a trail. You know, we pioneer new things all the time at Amazon. We don't just say, well, this is my job and, you know, this is step one and step two. You know, we're going out there and we're making history, you know. And so being in a place like Amazon is very special, you know, and to me it's just naturally a great culture fit for any person who's served in the military. In terms of opportunities, you know, the last time I checked, I think Amazon had 10,000 job openings or more. It's just insane how much the company is growing. And so there's so many different opportunities. Again, I focus a lot on recruiting from an operations leadership standpoint, but there are so many other big opportunities as well. And in this country, there is a major shortage of people who have strong tech skills, whether it's coding or working in the cloud space. There are a lot of great jobs in Amazon Web Services as well. So someone who's transitioning and looking to build new skills, there is a huge opportunity in this country for veterans to sort of arm ourselves with knowledge and proficiencies in the tech space world and pursue really great opportunities at places like Amazon in the tech space, but also in any sort of support type role. Human resources is another one. Safety, facilities, I could go on all day. There's just an unlimited amount of opportunities at Amazon.
I want to go backwards in this interview, Colby. A few minutes ago, you referenced a acronym called STAR in terms of when somebody's interviewing. Is STAR something that you look for in an answer, or is STAR a technique that somebody being interviewed would use in terms of being able to chunk information under kind of an acronym to be able to answer a question thoroughly?
I'm glad you brought that back up, because I think the first time somebody told me about that, I took it so serious, you know, that I probably started to sound almost too scripted or too much of like a robot. So to answer your question, it's just a really good way to organize your thoughts and to articulate a really strong message. It's not necessarily, you know, right or wrong way to do it. It's just a good reminder for someone who, you know, when you're put on the spot, you really never know what to expect in an interview. But if you can sort of map out prior to an interview, maybe 5 or 10 situations where, you know, you've accomplished something as a leader and have those sort of stored in a memory bank. And then when you get asked a question in an interview and you're put on the spot, utilizing that STAR format to just bucket your information and how you articulate your message will just really help you deliver a much stronger in-depth message so that the interviewer really understands the value that you bring to the organization and what you can offer.
All right, that's a great answer. Let me ask you another question relative to interviewing skills. Are there certain ways that a civilian interviewer is going to want to hear information? I've been told that, you know, they want to know, if they ask, you know, about what you did. They want to know how many people you may have been in charge of, how many people you administered over, the size of your territory that you were in charge of, what you were operationally in charge of. Those kind of terms resonate with civilian interviewers, whereas sometimes we'll use military terms that simply don't resonate and don't convey what we actually did. Are there terms that guys can use to correctly convey what they did and make it easy for somebody to say, okay, I got it, I understand what you did?
You know, this may be bad advice, but a common mistake that I see a lot of veterans make is that, and we almost openly talk to each other about civilianizing our resumes and translating our experience into the civilian world.
Right.
And, you know, if we had a civilian visit us on ship or on base or on a deployment or whatnot, we wouldn't change the way that we speak to the civilians. And so I see a lot of veterans put on their resume, let's say they were an S4, you know, S4, an admit sort of officer or NCO,
right,
and they'll put on their resume director of HR or something that's completely, it's like saying a corporal is a colonel.
Right.
And so I think a lot of times we make mistakes in trying to civilianize our resume or civilianize what it is that we're trying to say. And we get so caught up in that versus just leveling with that person and just connecting with them on a personal level and just really having a conversation. Yes, you want to use the STAR format to articulate a strong message, but every interviewer is different. And so you really want to make that personal connection and just really be able to slow down and explain to them what it was that you did. Somebody may not understand the difference between, infantry or, you know, artillery, but you don't have to explain that part. What you do want to explain is, what was the situation? What was your responsibility? And just kind of tell a story, and just be smart about it. But don't over translate your resume or any key words. You're not going to just say one or two words that's really going to convince somebody. There's still the natural human behavior to really connect with someone on a personal level and share your story with them.
All right. Colby, talk to us about how do Marines find you? I mean, is there a way that they can find military recruiters? Because to be honest with you, you hear people talking about military recruiters, but you're the first one I've spoken to, and I know different there are different kind of companies that are HR companies or headhunter companies. You know, they have military representatives, and I think a lot of officers deal with those guys. How do Marines getting out, how do they find you?
LinkedIn has been a great resource for me. I would encourage every veteran to get on LinkedIn and to create a good profile, do some research on what a good LinkedIn profile looks like, and then start connecting. You can actually run a search within LinkedIn, and you can type in military recruiter, and then there's an option on the left where you can filter by companies. Now, if you just type in military recruiter, you may get a bunch of recruiters for the military. But then if you type in military recruiter and then let's say you click on Boeing or Amazon or Microsoft, guys like myself will start popping up. The key to that, though, is to really build your network on LinkedIn. The more connections, the more visibility you will have. So that's definitely one of the big ones. That's like step one. But then step two, get out to some of these big military career fairs and build personal relationships. Another one, here in Seattle, we've got a great Marine for Life chapter. A bunch of Marines get together once a month. There's another organization out there that I haven't had the opportunity to participate in, but I hear a lot of great things. It's called Work of Honor, and it works a lot like Marine for Life, but they really focused on getting veterans from all different military branches together. So LinkedIn's a big one. Career fairs are a big one. And then networking, getting out there, making contact with folks and staying in touch with them and continue to just build your network.
All right. I want you to help me build my career. I'm getting ready to transition out. I'm a 4-year sergeant. I'm a combat veteran from Afghanistan. And I am interested in tech because, you know me, I'm a grunt, so I'm all over that Game Boy and that PlayStation. All right, I'm all about it. So, I'm interested in technology, and I want to create an 8-year plan for myself because I joined when I was 18. I'm going to turn 23 this summer, and so I'm looking at by the time I'm 30. I'm going to have a job that I really like, and I'm going to be in a place that I want to spend either the rest of my life or certainly a good place for me, and that's what I want to do. So where do I go? Give me some advice. So do I go to school at a college? Do I move? What do I do?
That's a great question, and I wish I had someone give me this sort of advice when I got out, but also just in the last 10 years, technology has rapidly advanced, and some of the greatest job opportunities are in the tech space. And just like I wasn't really a high school type student, I really wasn't a computer type guy either. But as Marines do, we are really good at working hard. And if you can be smart about your goals, you're going to go and build a skill set for yourself where those are the jobs that are in the highest demand, where there's the greatest opportunities in this country. And so you should capitalize on something like that. So I would have loved for someone to just grab me as I was exiting the Marine Corps. I'm like, what's your plan? You know, I'm going to move to Florida. I'm going to go to Florida State. Great. What's your degree in? And I got my degree in international affairs, and I kind of had this mentality of I'm going to get a degree and it's going to be a check mark in the box. But I still didn't build a really strong skill set for myself.
Right.
So my recommendation is to go to a university where you can get into a competitive program and build a very specific skill, whether it's finance or accounting or human resources, whatever it may be. But specifically in the tech space, they are doing a lot of really cool things in the tech space. It's like learning a new language. So you could do some research on the internet. What are the most competitive tech jobs? I'll tell you, one of the biggest ones is, you'll hear the term SDE, Software Development Engineer. And so there are programs out there actually will help veterans learn how to code. And there are a lot of coding languages out there that don't necessarily require a four-year degree. So you don't have to go into a four-year computer science program. So if you just take some time to do some research on that, you may be surprised about the opportunities that are out there, and just get laser focused. Hey, over the next 2 years or the next 4 years, I'm really going to focus on building this new, really strong skill set for myself. Now you become one of the most marketable people out there, and there's going to be a, you know, unlimited amount of doors that are opening for you, and you can pick and choose where you really want to work and where you really want to live. But now your transition is complete. So I would definitely encourage veterans to really look into getting into the tech space, and don't be intimidated by, I'm not really a computer guy. You can do, you know, just what anybody else can do if you put your mind to it. So that would be a big opportunity for anybody that's getting out of the Marine Corps right now.
And as you said previously, I think you mentioned cloud services, and you mentioned one other something else. But, you know, you think about that, and all that is related, you know, in one way, shape, or form to the mobile platform, which is your cell phone. And I don't care who you are. It can't be lost on you. For instance, All Marine Radio, 95% of the contact we have with the planet on cell phones. Facebook,
right?
People listening on their cell phone to the interviews we do, streaming our programming live, 95% of it on the cell phone. And so if you can do something that has something to do with a cell phone, right, you're putting yourself in a position to have a job that's in demand. And if your job's in demand, guess who dictates terms for where they live, what they do, and things like that. You do that. Talk to me about a lot of Marines involved in operations aren't tech guys. Certainly we do operations like not too many people do operations. Amazon a good place to go to work if you're in operation?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there is just a tremendous amount of growth at Amazon, especially in operations. When you order that package online that shows up on your doorstep, it doesn't do it on its own. So, you know, Amazon looks for leaders, and about 30% of our current managers in operations have a military background, whether they recently transitioned or maybe served, you know, 10 years ago. The type of leader that it takes to be successful in an environment where it's very fast-paced and you're leading teams of 100, maybe 500 or more people, it takes somebody who isn't just a good manager. It's somebody who really knows what it means to be a really good leader. So there are a lot of opportunities in operations at a place like Amazon. And the really cool thing about it is maybe you start there and then later you do a transfer into something else, maybe more tech related, or maybe you decide, like me, you have a passion for human resources. And so when you go to a company like Amazon that's growing at a really fast pace, a lot of doors also open up for you internally as well. So I definitely think it's a good place for somebody, whether you're really experienced and that's your passion, you want to be in operations, or you're looking to make a transition and kind of get things going, you're branding yourself with a really strong company where you're going to be surrounded by a lot of smart, hardworking people. You'll get a lot of mentorship and meet a lot of great folks. So, yeah, I can't say enough great things about joining a place like operations at Amazon. I would have loved to have had that opportunity right out of Florida State. It would have been it would definitely have sped up my transition as well. So,
Colby Williamson, our guest, he's a former infantry sergeant in the United States Marine Corps, a veteran of the Battle of Fallujah with 1st Battalion, 3rd Marines, and currently the military recruiting manager at Amazon. First of all, I want to thank you for being so generous with your time. And we've been working on this interview, and I screwed it up once. And so I want to thank you for being patient, Colby, and especially being generous with your time tonight. In this whole time, what do you want to say that I'm not smart enough to ask you? Either something Marines need to hear, something you want them to know about Amazon. What have I screwed up that you want to talk about?
You know, thanks for having me. This has just been a great opportunity and just an honor to be able to give back to the other Marines out there and sort of share the lessons that I've learned. You know, like I said earlier, you know, I could go on all day about the opportunities and things that, you know, veterans could do. The number one thing is, as I would just say, don't cut yourself short. You know, don't get too caught up on living in a particular location or a particular career path that you're making assumptions about. Just really open up your mind. You know, Marines and what it takes to be successful as a Marine is something very special that you just don't find at most places. And it's the type of person who decides to join the Marine Corps already says a lot about you, your character. So when you get to the civilian world, open up your mind. Don't cut yourself short. Do your research and, you know, work hard to make this country a better place and hopefully blaze a trail for the veterans that are coming in behind you.
Bottom line, Colby, do employers want to hire Marines?
Yeah, absolutely. I think any employer who doesn't want to hire Marines just hasn't met one yet.
Another question. Guys who fought, you know, combat veterans, I was told when I, you know, got ready to transition, hey, don't talk about your combat deployments. Don't say anything about that because a lot of employers are very intimidated. They'll think that the immediate assumption is that you have PTSD and they don't want to deal with that no matter what anybody says. Do you have any advice for combat veterans in terms of those topics when they come up?
Absolutely. Just think about it as, you know, it's operations. You shouldn't cut yourself short. You should articulate all the things that you did as a leader in a combat situation. Just make sure that it's business appropriate. And then I think that you wouldn't be cutting yourself short. And I think that, you know, you'll be successful. And that's an uncomfortable thing to talk about. It's really uncomfortable to talk to somebody that you don't know that you just met.
Right.
And it's difficult to sugarcoat those conversations. But if you practice at it and you're not too hard on yourself about it, I think that it's really important that Marines do that so that they can understand what it is that you bring to the table.
All right, final question about post-combat related mental health and work and things like that. One of the lessons I've learned in the first 2 months of doing All Marine Radio has been I think it's extra important that combat veterans find something that they love to do and that they're going to as they leave the Marine Corps, because if they do go to something, that means that their creative mental involvement in their work takes them someplace. It takes them someplace better. And you get up in the morning and the alarm's gonna go up at 4:30, but you're up at 4:10 because you're fired up to get to work and go work on something. I think that kind of creative involvement is really important for combat veterans. I'd be curious to hear what you think.
You know, I think it's self therapy in a way. You know, you go through these tough experiences and then you transition and, you know, you go back home and it's like I said earlier, it's very isolating. You go back and it's just you now, you know, before you're used to interacting with a whole bunch of Marines. And so when you don't have that sort of support system, it makes it difficult. And so for me, I was really focused on building a good career for myself because I wanted to have a family and to be able to give my family, you know, a nice, healthy life. And so that was my initial motivation. But what really inspired me was I found out what my passion was, and that was I like to serve and I want to give back. And there was a lot of work to be done, and there's still a lot of work to be done in the military veteran transition space. And so that sort of became, you know, my battle to fight or my opportunity and my way to continue to serve and honor all those Marines that were there before me and after me. So that's not what it's going to be for everyone. But to answer your question, you know, you take a couple of baby steps to kind of make that transition, maybe get your first job, sort of get the ball rolling. But once you get adjusted, you've got to figure out what it is that's going to get you up in the morning, that's going to get you motivated. And that will keep you focused. That will help you just really come full circle throughout that transition and just feel really comfortable with, you know, where you've come and where you're at. You know, I lost a lot of friends over there, and it was very difficult. You know, there wasn't a day that didn't go by that I didn't think about those guys. But by having a passion and something that I could pursue gave me an opportunity to sort of channel that in a really positive way. And so I would just encourage every veteran out there to get up in the morning with purpose and go after something that you're passionate about. It's bigger than you. And, you know, those opportunities are out there for you to go after and have an impact.
And that's from a guy who, you know, as Colby said, took 8 years to find his niche in terms of HR. So I think, you know, in terms of planning your career and doing those things, talking to smart guys, and your advice has been awesome advice, Colby, in terms of, you know, your transition is not going to be a 12-month event. It's going to be much longer than that. And if you tend to look at it as a longer event, then you can see it in phases and how you manage it and how you make better decisions. You don't have kind of a, you know, you don't have kind of a gun to your head and I've got to do this, I've got to do this, and it's a 3-month, you know, 6-month event. It's a much longer event. And I think if you do that, I think that dials down some of the pressure on it and allows you to make better decisions. But I'll tell you what, I love the thought of what you just articulated in terms of, you know, I feel deeply about the Marines we lost, and when I can find a job for a veteran, and I know that I'm helping him, you know what? I mean, how good do you feel when you go home at night?
Yeah, it helps you sleep, that's for sure. You know, so, you know, veterans have got to find a way to do something about this transition. It's not on a company or the government or some, you know, nonprofit organization. It's on us. We have a responsibility to ourselves to be successful. We have a responsibility for those who are coming in, you know, the younger veterans to make this, you know, a better place for all of them and not just us. So whatever it is that you do in your career, when you get to the other side and you're successful, I would challenge, you know, every Marine out there to reach back and help out two buddies. A recent organization, I'll just share it with you real quick, that I'm really feeling really passionate about and working with these guys. It's called Veterati, V-E-T-R-A-T-I, and it's a mentoring platform that you can sign up for through your LinkedIn account, and it will automatically sign you up for a mentor. And so it has a smart algorithm where it connects you with guys like myself or whoever out there is, you know, willing to spend some time and offer some, you know, mentoring advice. And so it's stuff like that where, you know, if you're, transitioning in 2 years from now, you should start working on your transition now. You shouldn't be waiting to, you know, you're 6 months out. Yeah, I tell veterans all the time, start 2 years before you transition, start going to these career fairs, you know, sign up for mentoring programs and whatnot, and start doing something about it now, because it's not easy for anyone. But definitely when you get to the other side and you kind of have that exhale moment like I did at 8 years, then that's when you've got a responsibility to the rest of the veteran community to have an impact on others.
All right, final question here. Walk us through how everybody on LinkedIn gets to Veterati.
Yeah, so you actually go to their you would go to Veterati.com first, and then it gives you an opportunity to log in by creating an account, or you can use your LinkedIn account. So if you've already got a LinkedIn profile set up and you're already logged into that on your computer, it'll give you an option to click on to be a mentor or to be a mentee, and it'll automatically log you in. And then, you just kind of use that passageway to get connected. So that's definitely, I would say, a big tip for everyone. You know, and if you're, you know, an officer or senior officer, or you've already been successful in the transition and you're listening, you should check that out and sign up to be a mentor.
All right. Now, one final question. Will you come back and do this again? Because a ton of information in a pretty long interview. What I'd like to do in the future, Colby, is have you back, I don't know, maybe every month or so, and let you give more career advice, update us on whatever programs Amazon's got, update us on where you're going to be, so Marines can come out and meet you. And then if you have any a tip of the month relative to getting hired, give us that as well. But I've been trying to connect with guys like you, and I know you said that you'd help me network with other guys that you know. But if you could have connected with you when you were getting out. As you said, the process would have been shorter. You probably would have been a little bit more confident. So, All Marine Radio is certainly in the business of being a broker and saying, hey man, we want to get you in touch with these dudes. And this is awesome. It's been awesome. It's been a great interview. And, just want to make sure you come back and do it again so that we can help you kind of reach a wider audience and put more guys in touch and spread the word and help you.
Sign me up. You know, this is really cool. I think you're doing something really special here. I hope to see, you know, your program continue to grow, because I think you're going to reach a lot of Marines, and, you know, there'll be probably an unmeasurable amount of impact that you're going to have on everyone. So I really appreciate what you're doing. And, yeah, I would love to share with everyone, you know, where we're going to be. I'd love to get you connected with a bunch of, counterparts at other companies and other organizations. I could shoot you an email after the call with some good names. And the next time, really probably the next big career fair, you know, where you can come meet myself and my team, the first week of September out in Washington, D.C., there's a couple of things going on at the same time. There is the Hiring Our Heroes Transition Summit, and any veteran can sign up for that. And then there is Military Mojo in Washington, D.C., and I think there's a small fee to sign up, but there's a lot of big employers that come out there for several days and host several networking events. So if you're available the first week of September, I'd love for somebody to walk up to me and say, hey, I heard you on the radio, and I'm here, and just want to meet you. I think that'd be pretty cool. So
All Marine Radio, he yells All Marine Radio and headbutts your ass?
Yeah, man, I would love to. I'd love to hear that. And thanks for everything you're doing. I think what you're doing is really special.
All right, hey, we're gonna set that up, man. When dudes start walking up and headbutting you, you know, you're gonna know exactly where they came from. All your peers are gonna be like, dude, what is up with you? Why is your forehead swollen? Like, I don't know.
Hey, that's just what Marines do. Don't pay attention to us. We're just having a good time over here. Yeah.
Exactly. All right, Colby Williamson, Sergeant, Marine Corps, veteran of the Battle of Fallujah with 1st Battalion, 3rd Marine. First of all, Colby, Semper Fidelis, man, great work in that city. I was with the division watching what you guys were doing down there, and you guys whooped it on their ass and knocked them right out of that city. So congratulations to you and everybody from 1st Battalion, 3rd Marines on a great job that you did there. And certainly you continue to do good things and helping veterans and helping Marines. Good on you, man. You're somebody that we're all proud of, and you turning around and sticking a hand down and helping other guys up is great stuff. And so thank you very much for doing this. We'll do it again down the road, and appreciate all your help, man.
All right. Appreciate it, brother. Thank you very much.
All right. We'll be back. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on the All Warrior Radio Network. We continue this morning on All Marine
Radio.
MilitaryByOwner.com
is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.